open source is software that's defined by the open source definition. You can find this at www.opensource.org, and it says about 10 things that a software license must have to be able to be called open source software. And that includes you must be able to use it for any purpose. You must be able to redistribute it, give it to your friends, modify it, fix it, etc. And yes, you can use it for things that make money, and no, you don't have to pay a royalty, a fee, for doing this. And this software has become very popular since about 1984, as the previous speaker told you, because people like writing software, and some of us, like me, are nutty enough to write software for free and give it away. And the reason that we do that is we are blessed to live in a society where we don't have to work every second. We can do some things just to be nice. And that's sort of the basis of open source and free software. We wrote this to be nice and give it away and see it used in colleges like it is here. And that's a thrill, and that's what we get back for writing this software. We don't need the money for it. Okay, so the authors of the open source definition were inspired by Richard Stallman's GNU project. And the GNU project is still around and still producing software. You can find their website at www.gnu.org, G-N-U. And it's important to bring up that these are not competing projects. Some people sort of put us in different corners like boxers in a boxing match. But we're not. The GNU project and open source are both working on the same thing. What are the advantages of open source? Well, besides the things that I've said, I want to point out you can give copies to your friends legally. That means not what you've been doing with that Microsoft Windows software. Okay, it sort of takes the fun out of it if you're not breaking the law, I know. Okay, if you change computer architectures, for example, if you go from a PC to a Macintosh, you can recompile the software because you have the source code. And thus, your program goes with you. Now, I know a few years ago when I switched from the Commodore 64 to the PC, I had to buy all new software. And of course, the software manufacturers were very happy about that. But that's not good for you, the end user. So that's one of the important things about open source, is if you are depending on this for your business, it gives you the option to use the cheapest computer that you can find that year, because you will not lose your software investments. So that's very important. Other important things about open source. I reported, I guess about a dozen bugs in Microsoft Windows about 5 years ago, and they will eventually get fixed. But the bugs that I have found in Linux have been fixed already because I typed in the fixes myself. And my friends who were not able to program have needed fixes in the software that they are using, and they paid somebody to fix it on their schedule, not Microsoft's. So that's very important. You are in control of your destiny when you use open source software. There is no big company that says, nah, we won't translate it to your language. So it's very important to have that kind of control. As I hear you've learned here in Iceland with Microsoft not wanting to translate. Okay, if the company that makes your software dies, for example, Netscape looks like it's going to live now because it got bought by AOL, and AOL has a lot of money. But if that company died, the source code for Netscape Navigator, which we call Mozilla, is already open source. So that would go on being supported by whoever needed to use it. So that's very important. Your source code does not die when your company goes out of business if it's open source. Okay, you can add features. Many businesses need custom software. Very easy to do with open source because you have the source code. In addition, it's easy for companies to collaborate. Competitors don't always want to give each other software for their businesses, but this sort of gives them a way to collaborate, and they all benefit, and nobody gets hurt. Open source software is more powerful and more technically advanced. For example, there is a new internet protocol called IPv6. That is the next generation of the internet. It has 64-bit internet addresses. So theoretically, there is an internet address for every electrical outlet in the world in this new system. Linux and FreeBSD are currently the only systems that support IPv6. Microsoft has to catch up. And am I speaking clearly enough? Is anyone having trouble understanding me? That's good. Well, again, interrupt, ask questions if you want. Okay, and it doesn't come from Microsoft, which is important to a lot of people. A lot of people really resent Microsoft. Next slide, please. By the way, it works very well with Microsoft software. My wife has a Windows 98 workstation. It's right next to my workstation running Linux at home. She uses Windows 98 because she uses Word and Excel at work, and we have Quicken on her Windows 98 machine. And my machine running Linux is the file server for her Windows machine. It is the internet gateway for her Windows machine. And it also uses the printer on the Windows machine. So the interoperability between Linux and Windows is very good. Okay, so how does open source get all of the advantages? Again, the full source code for your program is distributed. The software license lets you redistribute, no royalties. You can change it. You can use it for anything you want. Those are the important things to remember about open source. That's why I'm repeating them. Next slide, please. Okay, what software is available? A lot of people said for a long time this open source and GNU project would never come to anything because no one is going to take the time to write an operating system. And everyone believed that until this 20-year-old kid sat down and wrote an operating system, which really annoyed the thousands of computer scientists who thought they would get around to it someday. And Linus Torvalds wrote that as his first C program. My first C program was Hello World. Okay. So there are some smart people around there, and Linus has not really gotten money directly from writing Linux, but he's gotten very many of what I'd call intangible benefits. For example, people beg him to come to places like this and speak. And he's got a very nice job in the United States now, and probably any company would hire him. And he lives the way he wants to. So he did pretty well out of this project. But he just wants to write the best software. That's all he cares about. Okay, besides Linux, we have the Apache web server. Apache is the most popular web server. It is on more than half of websites all around the world. It is free software. People wrote it and gave it away. And it happens that that made it possible for everyone to put the features they wanted in the software. So it became the best web server around. We have the GNOME and KDE graphical user interfaces. People said no one will ever use Linux because it has that awful command line environment, and who wants to type? cat pipe to WC to find out how many lines are in your file. And they said, no one's going to write a good-looking desktop for Linux because that's a really hard job and it takes lots of time and no one would do it for free. Well, now we have two competing desktops and they each make each other better because it's a rivalry and they're both free. One started out not free, but I shouted as loud as I could and it became free eventually. And then we have word processing, spreadsheets, checkbook, not quite compatible with Excel, not quite as good as Quicken yet. But remember, we had nothing a few years ago, and we've become a very big system since. So I expect that in a few years we will have Quicken, and we will have something as good as Quicken, and we will have much better Microsoft application compatibility. E-business. E-business is very easy to do on Linux. I have an e-business server at home. It takes charge cards. It serves up web pages. You can download files. You can click a button to send me money. I find that very nice. Okay, scientific applications. A friend of mine is working on the genome project here. And I understand that a lot of the genome software has been released as open source. Astronomy, the whole star catalog is up in open source. It's very useful. I, in fact, have it on my own computer because I'm a radio ham, a radio amateur. And we have amateur radio satellites, and I use the astronomy software to point my antenna at them. And, of course, computer theoretical science. Most of the research is being done on open source platforms these days because those platforms are so easy to modify. I'm going to take a break for a second. Does anyone have questions so far? You're all understanding me? Okay, good. Databases, well, we have Oracle now. Oracle is the world's number two software company by size. And that is not free software, but it's very good commercial software that runs on Linux. And in fact, they'll be demonstrating it outside, as they will the KDE graphical user interface. We have also free databases that are not quite as good as Oracle, but they're good. We have Perl, the report formatting language. It was written just to make reports, and now it does everything. The only problem with Perl is I find it very difficult to read. It's sort of like hieroglyphics. Networking. The first IP address spoofing systems that you could have more IP addresses in your company than were visible to the outside. The first one of those was done on Linux, and then the companies that made internet routers caught up with Linux now. Firewalls, very easy, file servers like mine for my wife's Windows system. And communications. I have a 486 that serves 100,000 email messages a day. It's a mailing list server. And it just keeps running. You could not use a Windows 486 to serve 100,000 emails a day. It's just not powerful enough on that platform. Telephony. We're getting telephony now, so you can make phone calls over the internet with Linux. And we're starting to see some video. In fact, Alan Cox is here. Alan is the number two person in the Linux world right after Linus Torvalds. And if Linus stops working on Linux someday, Alan Cox will take over from him. And he is going to talk about the work that he's been doing and about Linux in general later today. Alan did a lot of the Linux video work. That's a pretty interesting topic. Diversions. We have games, not as many as Windows yet, but we're catching up. and we have online chat. We actually have probably about a dozen different ways to go on IRC under Linux, and I actually blame that for the fact that Linux development has not gone on faster because everyone's on IRC talking to each other. Okay, and there are about 5,000 software packages in all. I worked on the Debian Linux distribution. It's the only Linux distribution that is made entirely by volunteers, not for profit. So that is a competitor for Red Hat Linux. And Debian has, I believe, over 3,000 software packages that you can get. It comes on 4 or 5 CDs now. Next slide, please. How am I doing on time? Oh, good. Okay. So, any questions yet? Good. I'll keep talking then. Okay, what's missing? What can't you get in free software? What do you still have to pay for if you want best quality? Word processors aren't good as some of the commercial ones yet, and people need to help on that. There is no Quicken for Linux yet. It's only a matter of time. Yes? Oh, you don't have Quicken here? Quicken is managing your money software. It's actually very important to me because it keeps my marriage together. Because Valerie, my wife, and I both know exactly what is in the bank at any one moment. And Quicken is something that I've been using to balance my checkbook for about 10 years. Would you just have a different name for it here? Okay. Maybe this is some huge untapped market. Are you all balancing your checkbooks with pen and paper? Oh, okay. Your bank is helping you do this online or even on the printed statement. Yeah. But with Quicken, when I want to pay a bill, I just click and it mails the check. It doesn't make me write anything. And that's been very useful. Okay, so there's no Quicken yet, and that's very important unless you live in Iceland. And the free Microsoft Windows emulation is incomplete, which means it'll run Solitaire, but it won't run everything. And there is another way to run Windows. There's a program called VMware that lets you boot two operating systems on the same computer at the same time. And it works reasonably quickly. And you can run Windows and Linux on the same computer if you need to do it. And the applications just show up in separate windows. But we would like to give you a free replacement for Windows. And that's been in process, worked on for 5 years or so, but it's not done. And it still needs a few more years of work. And meanwhile, Windows is getting farther away because they keep adding stuff. So it's sort of a race, and I'm not sure we're winning. Okay, compatibility with Microsoft applications is poor. You can't necessarily load your Excel worksheet into a Linux spreadsheet and have it work exactly the same way yet, but that is being worked on. No drivers for some software devices. For example, I own a scanner that only works on Windows, and that's a problem. And the reason that that problem exists is that the hardware manufacturers are not releasing documentation on their devices. So we are always asking them to do that, and when they're very unresponsive, we publicize how unresponsive they are so that people who run Linux know to not buy that hardware. And then usually they give us the documentation. But there's another way to get device drivers called UDI, the Universal Driver Interface, which is a way to make drivers that will work for both Microsoft Windows and Linux. and that is just starting to happen now. But I would actually prefer a native Linux driver because I get the source code for them and I can fix them if I need to. System configuration, installation needs improvement. Windows is very good about finding all the cards that are plugged into your computer. Linux is not quite that good yet. It finds most of the cards. Some of them it needs to be told. So we need to fix that. Good GUIs like GNOME and KDE are just coming online, just now. So not ready for some people yet. And of course, all of these problems will be addressed in time. Very many businesses are interested in Linux now, so things are happening very quickly. Next slide, please. How well does it work? I have a Linux system at home. It serves 10 different websites. It's connected to a 768 kilobit per second wire to the internet. This is a Pentium 120 system, a rather modest system by today's standards, yet it can feed web pages and FTP pages to the internet at the full speed of my internet connection. And at the same time, that is my workstation. I'm usually logged into the server running a Windows system at 1600 by 1280 resolution, very high resolution, because while it's being a very busy internet server, only 5% of my CPU power is being used. So Linux is very efficient. Also, those 10 web servers are rather important web servers. The Linux system that serves them is at home. The system manager is here. I logged in last night. It was still up. I don't expect it to crash because Linux just keeps going, which is really very refreshing if you've seen Windows. Okay. Much less susceptibility to viruses on Linux. There are two reasons for that. One reason is it's what's called a protected operating system. Protected operating system means that your program can only modify your program's data. It can't modify the operating system's data. And that is the main strategy that viruses would use to install themselves. So Microsoft now is just catching up to having a protected operating system when we've had it for years and years. And also better engineering. Better engineering is really important. I guess everyone here has heard about the Melissa virus. We're very quiet. Okay, the Melissa virus was an email virus. And it was a Word document, and it said, "Hey, look at this." And you had to click on something to open the Word document. And Microsoft Word has an extension language called Word Basic. And when you open a Word document, it will run a Word Basic program in that document if one is there. So this particular message had a Word Basic program that mailed the same message to the first 50 people in your email address book. So what happened was you would get this Melissa virus, and it would mail to 50 people that you knew using your name and saying, "Hey, look at this." And they would click on it, and then it would mail itself to 50 people that they knew. And this shut down many of the companies in the United States for a day or two and got the person who wrote it arrested. Yes? 51st addresses, yeah. Address lists in Outlook, so they were mailing lists as well. So it was more than 50 people. Yeah, so what would happen was because of all this mail going around, the servers that moved the email in the company would just saturate from the load because they weren't Linux either. And so your company was down for the day. Okay, so there's a man in jail or waiting to go to jail because of this. But the real criminals are still out there in Redmond, Washington, making money. Okay. You know, it's a very strange thing. You can always get a laugh or attention out of an audience by making fun of Microsoft. Whether it makes sense to do so or not, it just always works. So what happened was Microsoft knew about this problem for a year. It had been widely publicized on the internet. There were lots of messages that said, hey guys, disable this in your system or be very careful about opening up a Word document because you can run Word basic programs that have much power. Now, there's another way to run a program that comes to you over the internet. Actually, a few ways. One is called Java and one is called JavaScript. One comes from Sun Microsystems and one comes from Netscape. Now, it's been a very long time since a Java or JavaScript program would do something bad to your system because the companies that made these things prevented those programs from having any power to do things other than display on your screen and take input and make output. They couldn't write the disk, for example. So Microsoft knew about that for a whole year and did nothing. Microsoft left their customers' systems open to attack, and they knew about it. So the fault behind these viruses is Microsoft's. It's, well, you don't have forests here, but I guess you've seen them on TV. And it's like a forest that has not had a burn in many years and is just waiting for someone with a match to come by, and then the whole thing goes up and it's a big tragedy. And in California, we burn our forests a little bit at a time so that this doesn't happen in a big mess. And so it was like a forest that had no controlled burn. It was just waiting for one idiot to come by and it would explode like an atomic bomb. You don't leave atomic bombs out for idiots to play with, Microsoft. Okay. Okay, so back to how well does it work. Linux is the fastest operating system on monoprocessor systems. There was recently a benchmark that said on a multiprocessor system, NT runs 2.5 times faster. We'll fix that, don't worry. Linux has the fastest networking, absolute fastest, because it was written by Alan Cox, who you'll talk with later. What else? As I said, a Pentium 100 is a very powerful system under Linux. I had one that ran the entire Debian project. It served the web, the FTP, and had the home directories of 200 users. And that was a Pentium 100. It stayed up once for 63 days, and then we took it down to change a disk. The software did not crash in all that time with 200 people logging in and out. And that was probably the same kind of system that many of you have on your desks today, except mine was running Linux. Okay, and as I said, a 486 can deliver 100,000 emails a day. Servers, again, have enough power left over to be a workstation. So you don't necessarily have to buy a server, and there's been this phenomenon in companies where the engineers ask for a server, and then the boss says, no, we can't afford a server yet. So the engineers find some old computer and make it a server, and they don't tell the boss. And then in about a year, they tell the boss, our server needs an upgrade. And the boss says, we have a server? And so this has been a way that Linux is sort of sneaking into companies. Okay, software time to repair and time to new feature is much better because the source code is disclosed. Okay, and Y2K is the second most stupid thing in computer science today. Viruses are the most stupid thing because they're so preventable. I mean, we saved 2 bytes by not having a 4-digit date. Now, if you look at the way the date is stored on Linux and Unix, the date is stored in 4 bytes along with the time, and it's good for any time from 1970 through 2036, and it includes hours, minutes, and seconds. 4 bytes. That would not even display the year and the hours and the minutes the way most people were programming. So Linux and Unix programmers had a better way to save memory before Y2K came along. And again, how do you make your Linux program Y2K compatible? You don't touch it, because our dates are good until probably I'll be 70 or something before we have a problem with our dates. And then to be Y200,000K compatible, we have to recompile with a 64-bit date instead of a 32-bit date. Now, that would take about 5 minutes to fix each program. You could set your system compiling, and it would all be done, several thousand programs the next day. So I always laugh when I hear about this Y2K problem and all of the programmers who've had great temporary jobs because of it and will be looking for work again sometime around 2001 or two. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, where can you get it? This is your homework assignment. If you're not running Linux or Unix, try it out. First of all, there are lots of disks available for $50 or less. Places to look, www.redhat.com, that's R-E-D-H-A-T, and Debian, www.debian.org. And their SUSE is one in Germany, and a few others here. These are all places where you can get Linux and you can get some degree of support. Or you can copy someone else's Linux disk. Just borrow their disk. Next slide, please. Okay. Should you still be using it? Should you be using Linux? If your VCR is still blinking 12 o'clock, wait a year or two until we have good GUIs. It's not ready for you yet. Does Windows satisfy all of your needs affordably? It happened that it didn't satisfy mine. That was one of the major reasons that I'm running Linux today. I just could not afford, $300 every year or so for a new development software suite, etc. And, of course, the C compiler is free with Linux. And you get free updates. Just download another one. Do you need software that's only available on Windows? If so, you can't use Linux yet, at least not for that job. But you might consider writing that software for Linux or telling the company that sells you that software on Windows that you would like to have it on Linux. Okay, do you need hardware that's not supported, like my scanner? Well, if you have hardware like that that's not supported, please tell the manufacturer, hey, I want a Linux driver. Please do that for me. Because hopefully another 1,000 people are telling them, and they will then make a Linux driver. Okay, is your boss fearful? This is a major reason for not using Linux in your business, because your boss is afraid that you won't be able to get support, or Linus Torvalds will die and there will be no one left to write it, or this stuff is written by hackers and he just doesn't trust hackers, or And this is the one I always hear. Everyone is using Microsoft. Why should we be different? And so if your boss is fearful, there are a couple things you can do. One thing is get a new job. And another is do things like this talk today. Educate the people in your company. I did not have a degree in public speaking. I just got up here and shivered through the first few occasions and, you know, spread the good word as much as I can. And so you have to evangelize your company about Linux. And lots of people like that. If you do a talk for your engineers in your company, a lot of people will come to hear about it. In fact, I now have law companies, companies of lawyers, asking me to come and do lunchtime talks so that they can understand this open source software and the licenses, which obviously lawyers have to work with. Okay, so do you need to do things that off-the-shelf software won't do? There are about 9 companies in the United States that are trying to make rockets to go to space. It's the new big business. It's bigger than the internet. And those companies are doing a lot of the engineering and guidance software under Linux because they have the whole system and they trust it and they have to write all the stuff. And, okay. And is money a limiting factor rather than time? If it is, you want to use Linux because it's free. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, how's the software developed? Usually one person writes a program, releases it with the source code to the net, and then everyone joins in. And so I have been working with approximately 200 people on the Debian Linux distribution. I have now met a bunch of them, but I was the leader of the project before I met even one. They were just email. And we get an exciting amount of work done that way. It's really quite surprising. Okay, and there are projects that you can join. For example, the GNOME project to make a GUI, the Debian project to make a Linux distribution. If you aren't a programmer, you can be a technical writer. We need people to document things. And it's really nice because interesting things happen with your software. Next slide, please. This is one of the interesting things that happens with your software. One day, I got an email that said, how do I make this system boot without a VGA console? I only have a serial terminal. And I said, okay, this will take me about 15 minutes to make the answer, and I'll have to reboot my system to do this. And I've never heard of the person asking this question before, so should I waste the time for him? And I said, yeah, okay, I will. So I rebooted my system. I figured out how to make it work with a serial console. I wrote him back how to do it. About an hour later, I get back a message. That worked great, thank you. I'm putting this on the space shuttle. Okay, and I was out of my seat and on the floor backwards. Okay, so there is a system that I had been writing as a hobby, flying on the space shuttle. As it happened, it flew twice because the battery in the space shuttle broke the first time, so they had to come back. And it was controlling plant growth experiments, so it was doing closed-loop process control and sending back telemetry. And it was running on a computer about this big with a solid-state disk. And the software that was running was very much of it was stuff that I'd written or stuff that I'd put together that came from other people. And at the same time that this was up in space, I was working for Pixar, and we were about to release Toy Story. And people kept asking me, gosh, aren't you proud that you work for Pixar? And I'd say, well, yeah, but then my hobby project is up there in orbit. So this kind of, you know, hobbies become your occupation sometimes. Next slide, please. Okay, so what does the future hold? What do you think? I'm clairvoyant. Software patents are going to be a problem. Microsoft, IBM, other companies are patenting 10% more this year than last year. And fortunately, you don't have software patents here and in Europe the way we do in the United States. Please keep your governments from supporting software patents. First of all, because suddenly you will have to pay for all the things that you're already using. And it will probably bankrupt your government because it uses a lot of software that has patents on it. Second, because when we give software away for free, we can't afford to pay the patent royalties. So software patents in the U.S. could be a real problem in the future because people are patenting digital audio, digital video, etc., and then we can't use it without paying for it, etc. Very bad. Okay, open source will become more important, as you can see it's doing. All of the applications you need will be available, including Quicken, so you can find out what it is. And proprietary software will continue to be a healthy business. Folks, we are not putting programmers on the street. There will always be people willing to pay for software, and there will always be software that you have to pay for. Do not consider open source a threat. It is actually something that helps your business because it gives you a level playing field where you can all compete equally, which you didn't have with Microsoft because they own things that they didn't tell you about, that their applications used, etc. Okay, customers will demand open standards because they don't want to be locked into one system again. And Microsoft and other companies will do what they call embrace and enhance. They will take open standards and try to make them closed standards. And we need you, the customer, to help resist this process.